Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Trend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by John Andrews. It is the first news story today, and this is about the country's continuing discussion on the policy of Black Economic Empowerment, BEE. And there was an interesting opinion piece on News24's website from one of their sort of leading journalists, Quinita Hunter, and the headline is, BEE policies have failed, not transformation. Now, why are we going to talk about this? It's because Quinita Hunter has been a very big defender of kind of the sort of regime of racial I don't know what to call it, racial restitution, racial politicking, racial economics. But I think this piece shows how much the debate has shifted. So let me just quote a little bit from Hunter's discussion here. She talks about how the government's ambitious, what she calls an ambitious 3% growth target, is either a realistic goal or a pipe dream. And then she says, spoiler, it's the latter, which is, I think, something both of us would agree with. And she says that this has helped to reignite this debate around whether BEE is in fact useful. She kind of divides the debate into three camps. She says camp one is people like Helen Ziller. She calls them Helen Ziller types who argue we should abandon race-based policy altogether. They believe that economic growth, not redress, will lift all boats. She says, however, that this argument conveniently overlooks the fact that the economy's deep concentration was not an accident, but a product of deliberate racial exclusion. She, however, concedes that this camp cites high-profile cases of abuse and transformation used as ANC, quote, get-rich-quick schemes, and that indeed these examples are real. She describes camp two as those in the ANC who have benefited personally from BEE and now resist any suggestion that transformation has faltered and that, in fact, any criticism of BEE is, in fact, a denial of Black people's right to be wealthy. She, however, criticizes this group for failing to acknowledge that the policies of BEE have had a negative effect. Then she describes what she calls Camp 3, the realists, who I presume she puts herself amongst, those who understand that it's unsustainable that the economy has not meaningfully changed since 1994. It goes on to talk about what she says is the Competition Commission's finding that there's significant concentration in the economy, which is a phrase President Ramaphosa used a lot recently, and that there has to be a sustained commitment to transformation in a very different way from what exists. So, John, just generally your thoughts on this piece, but I think more importantly, we need to kind of start by saying that how far things have come, that essentially even people who not that long ago were willing to pretty much defend BEE in its entirety are now pretty keen to say that it's failed. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I think it's hugely significant. It's a really important development because I think using the Hunter scheme for assigning support for these policies into these three camps, according to that scheme, there would have only been two camps not that long ago. There would have been a very large camp, which was what she calls Camp 2, which are people who wholeheartedly endorse race-based laws across the board. And then there was a very, very small camp with very, very few members in it, like the IRR, for example, who were opposed to race-based laws and said this is not the way forward. And what we've seen happening over the past probably less than a year is the emergence of this third camp, which consists of people who used to be in Camp 2 and are now finding themselves drifting away from it and having to recognize that all of this race-based preferencing isn't really producing the results that were expected. And as a matter of fact, it is harming the economy quite badly. And this camp is growing in size, and it may well be that people like Ms. Hunter will over time move further until they find themselves in Camp 1, which is where they should be, shoulder by shoulder with the IRR opposing race-based policies and finding better ways of empowering South Africans. I see that Quinita Hunter still attaches quite a lot of stock to the idea of transformation. She doesn't spell it out, but she means race-based transformation. And our contention, of course, is that there's a far more important form of transformation that needs to happen, which is transformation from poverty to wealth. And what these race-based policies have produced so far is transformation in the opposite direction. They've made South Africans poorer, shown less ability to progress in life, produced less jobs. It's been really, really bad. And so if you want to have the real kind of transformation, which doubles the size of an economy within 10 years, if you've got a 7% per annum growth rate, then you've got to get rid of the race-based policies. There's a few other things you have to do as well, but that really is what you should be aiming for as a nation in your policy making. Nick?
So what really frustrates me about this is the sort of dismissal of you know, the Camp One argument, as she describes it, people like us saying that this, that we are overlooking the fact that the economy's deep concentration was not an accident, but a product of deliberate racial exclusion. And I think we very much recognize that. In fact, we argue very directly that, firstly, when the focus was on a more market-friendly approach from government, we did actually see significant transformation in the South African economy. Unemployment did drop. Sort of in the mid 2000s, we had actual sort of, you know, government revenues increasing. All the good stuff was happening when government took a more business friendly position. It wasn't enough. It wasn't sustainable, as it turns out. The government didn't stick to it. It was also partly driven by the commodities boom. But the point was that the case we're making actually has been proven by South Africa's own history to a degree. And there's sort of an almost a sleight of hand here, an assumption that, oh, it's just, it's impossible that people will break the sort of patterns of the economy unless, you know, there's a government hand to force racial social engineering. But I think this is just kind of, it's almost like a bit of a conspiracy theory that there's all these kind of, you know, capitalists with bags with sort of rand signs on them smoking cigars in a clubhouse somewhere who are saying, oh, let's exclude more people from the economy so we can pay them low wages, which is not really how economics works. What's your response to that line of thinking, John?
I would say that our economy does demonstrate elements of concentration in various sectors. It's a small economy. And so, you know, highly efficient businesses or those that are able to leverage their market power are able to concentrate a lot of resources in one sector. That does happen. I would just say that, you know, we have seen quite a lot of transformation in that area already in terms of race-based transformation, but it has not been cost-free. And I think the claim that has been made by the proponents of race-based transformation is that this can be done in a cost-free way. In other words, you can change ownership ratios, employment ratios, et cetera, without incurring any economic cost. And therefore, you know, it's a win-win. You should be doing it. And that turns out not to be true. There is an economic cost, and it's a very high cost. And that is why a different approach should be pursued. One more point to add to this is that there is a very high level of concentration of capital in certain areas of the economy, and that is where you look at state-owned enterprises. So if you look at Eskom, you know, with 80 or 90% control of the electricity market, or you look at Transnet with 100% control of the rail market, you look at PRASA with probably close to 100% control of the passenger rail market, you look at the ports, which are mostly controlled by the government, you look at water. Across all of these resources, there's a very high level of capital concentration in the hands of the state, producing very bad results. So if we want to reduce the levels of concentration, maybe that is where we should start. We should start by privatizing a lot of state-owned enterprises, or at least bringing a lot of more private sector involvement into them so that performance can improve in those areas. Nick?
I think also, you know, this is a very surface level, the sort of analysis of concentration that she's providing here is, I think, quite surface level in the sense that, you know, what are the real causes of concentration? Well, when you have a stagnant economy that's overregulated and has lots of interventions here and there, it tends to be only that kind of large established players are able to keep their footing in such an environment, and they sort of hold on to everything. Whereas when your economy is much healthier, when it's easy to start up new enterprises, when it's easy to hire and fire, then suddenly you get a lot more churn in the system, and old monopolies, old concentrations have a much harder time hanging on. Some of them will, you know, exist for a while, but a lot of them begin to sort of break up. And that's the real cause. The fact, you know, if there's no economic growth, then there's no new stuff coming into the system to break up these sort of concentrations. So, you know, I think the complaint about concentration actually only makes our point for us, which is that we need growth in order to actually break up the sort of static way that things are currently. And if you don't have growth, you're just going to have more people fighting over the same, you know, 50 rand.
Yeah. So, and there's just a really important point to add onto what you're saying, which is quite correct, which is that in many cases, government regulation imposes barriers to entry, barriers to new market entrants. And therefore, you don't get the dynamism in the market economy that will reduce concentration, introduce a greater variety of market actors, allow new companies to rise to the top. Often it's actually government policy that prevents that from happening. So deregulation, making it easier for new market entrants to come in, really would help a lot to reduce concentration if that really was the goal of the government.
Exactly right. I think, though, however, that this is a very positive sign as to the quality of this discussion about BEE, and I think the country is indeed moving in a positive direction on this policy question, even if we are not there yet, and even if the legislation isn't about to be changed. But I think the ideological battle is turning around, and I think that is only a good thing for millions of unemployed South Africans. Okay, let's move on to our next story, and this is fallout from the meeting between President Ramaphosa and President Trump in the White House, where President Ramaphosa was quite frankly sort of embarrassed by the fact that we have such a ridiculously high murder rate. And you had this bizarre spectacle of the South African delegation saying, no, we're not just trying to, you know, it's not just white people who are being murdered in South Africa, it's everyone who's being murdered in South Africa, which is not, it may be true, but it's not exactly the world's strongest defense of your position and your country. And so there is now discussion in the Justice and Crime Prevention and Security Cluster to discuss this issue and provide aggressive solutions to South Africa's crime problem, according to some reporting in, I think it was Business Live. My first sort of point is, okay, so it took us getting embarrassed on the international stage to be concerned about the fact that, you know, sort of over 60 people a day are being murdered. But that being said, in terms of murder rate, there has actually been some minor success in the last couple of years, since 2022, when the murder rate, I think, peaked. In the first quarter, at least, things have been getting a little bit better. It's still very high. The Minister of Police, Senzo Mchunu, said murder is now showing a decline, but is still at high levels. We need to contrast this with the lived experience of South Africans. We are low on technology, and the equipment we are using is oldish, and the thugs have learned we are behind. In a partnership, Business Against Crime and SA is willing to pay, and discussions are in an advanced stage. New technology has to be brought to the center, and we are now considering buying above our budget. We need drones and track and trace systems urgently. I think that would be useful, but it's ignoring the larger problems of the just sort of general dysfunction of the police to do basic tasks. They are overstretched. There are too few of them. They do not have discipline. Morale is low. All these kind of factors, which are much bigger impediment, I think, than not having drones. Your thoughts, John?
Yeah, I agree. So it's one of those cases where you don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. So the entire Trump-Ramaphosa interaction was quite unedifying. And Trump was very much focused on the white genocide story. But if it got attention to high crime rates in South Africa, that's probably a good thing. If it embarrassed the government into action, that's a good thing, even if it's very late. You know, and we've lost probably over 500,000, I think over 600,000 South Africans who've been killed, murdered since 1994. So just a vast number of people who've lost their lives unnecessarily in many cases, probably in all cases if they were murdered over the past 30 years, that needs to be addressed. Addressing that is not going to be, it's not going to be sufficient to just look at technology. As you say, drones will be nice and track and trace technology will be nice. But ultimately, it really needs the police services, the law enforcement services, and the criminal justice system, I think, to pull their collective socks up and take a serious hard look at how to get the crime rate down. It was encouraging to see the murder rate decline, I think, by 12% in the first quarter. At this stage, we don't know if that was a blip or if it will be sustained, but it is a number of lives saved already compared to previous quarters. And let's hope this is sustained and continued. That will go a long way towards making South Africa a better country.
Yes. May I suggest that the police first focus on, getting their normal IT systems to work, which in my, albeit limited experience, often do not even work in the sense that you can't even send an email necessarily to a police station, which is kind of bonkers. I'm not really sure how you're going to manage your drone program when your computers don't work. But yeah, no, this is one of the great sores that has bedeviled South Africa since the 90s. It is just continuing endless human tragedy, and getting this murder rate lower is of vital importance to the state function. And as we were discussing in our morning meeting amongst ourselves today, it's also a part of the economic growth recipe. Could you just unpack that a bit, John?
Yeah, so the comment is often made that high unemployment rates lead to high crime because people are idle, plus they're hungry. So they turn to crime to keep themselves busy and to feed themselves. But what's often missed is that the converse is also true, that high crime rates lead to high unemployment. Because when crime is as high as it is in South Africa, it's actually it depresses investment, it reduces growth prospects, and that means that there are fewer jobs and more unemployed people. And so, looking at from both directions, tackling the crime problem really is essential. It's to protect the life, property, and liberty of South Africans, but also to get economic growth going, to start creating jobs, and to give people better chances in their lives. It really is vital that we get crime under control.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for watching. We will see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.